Welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission is to uncover this hidden and frankly, really dangerous illusion of safety in the modern workplace.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, and it's one that a lot of organizations don't even realize they have.
Right. So we're pulling our insights today from a really brilliant article from March 2026 by Brian Barker, and it's called Closing the Gap Between Compliance and Safety Performance. And I want to ask you, the listener, right out of the gate, have you ever worked somewhere that looked just absolutely perfect on paper, but, you know, walking the floor felt like a disaster waiting to happen?
Oh, I think a lot of people are nodding their heads right now.
Exactly, because that is the massive gap we are exploring today. We are unpacking why, you know, checking all the right boxes might actually be blinding an organization to its real hidden risks.
Yeah, and in the environmental health and safety world, which, you know, we usually just call EHS, that illusion is honestly the single biggest trap an organization can fall into.
The biggest trap. Wow.
Oh, absolutely. Because the foundational premise here is that compliance is critical, right? Like, it creates the baseline for responsible operations.
Sure. You need rules.
Exactly. It defines the absolute non-negotiables, you know, the permits you need, the basic gear required, maximum exposure limits, all of that. But compliance alone does not guarantee strong safety performance. It's a starting line, not a force field.
I really like that. A starting line, not a force field.
I think we need to look at why that paperwork mirage is so universally deceptive. Because, I mean, a company can possess a mountain of evidence, right? Written policies, signed training records.
The perfect inspection checklist.
Yes. The beautifully bound safety manuals sitting on a shelf somewhere. And on paper, to an outside auditor, the system appears bulletproof.
Oh, yeah. They look at it and say, wow, A+.
Right. But in practice, you can have that exact same organization operating with incredibly weak hazard recognition. Like, you see inconsistent leadership, poor follow through, and people are just being exposed to preventable serious risks every single day. Yeah, and we see this dichotomy because systems are optimized for what gets measured. And audits measure documentation.
Just the paper.
Just the paper.
All right.
They categorize and tally up pieces of paper. And that gives executive leadership this really profound sense of control over the environment. You know, when leadership looks at an audit score and sees a 98%, they feel secure.
It totally makes sense why they'd feel that way, but it reminds me of getting a driver's license.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Right. Because you can pass the written test with flying colors, you know what a stop sign is, you know the speed limit, you can, like, identify a yield sign on a multiple choice screen.
Sure, you check the box.
Exactly. You have the documentation.
Yeah.
You are officially compliant with the state's requirements to operate a motor vehicle. But passing a multiple choice test in a quiet room has zero bearing on your ability to merge onto a chaotic six-lane highway
yeah.
in the pouring rain.
None whatsoever.
You have the license, so you're compliant, but you completely lack the situational awareness or, you know, the reaction time or the practical skill to actually avoid an accident. And that practical execution, that is your performance.
Yeah, and the phrase from Barker's article that captures this perfectly is he says, compliance is the floor. It is not the ceiling.
The floor, not the ceiling. I love that.
It's so true. And we have to look at the underlying incentives that keep really smart organizations trapped on that floor. Executive teams often treat compliance as the finish line, mostly because of legal and financial pressures.
Right. Liability.
Exactly. If an incident does happen, the very first thing the lawyers and the insurance companies ask for is the paperwork. Did we train them? Did we provide the manual? If the answer is yes, the company is shielded from massive liability.
So the paperwork protects the company in court, even if it doesn't protect the worker on the floor.
That is exactly yeah. it.
Man, that's dark, but it makes perfect sense. Leadership assumes the system is working because the legal liability is managed. But regulations and, like, internal requirements, they're simply not designed to capture weaknesses in human decision-making.
No, they can't.
A checklist cannot measure operational discipline. It can't tell you if a supervisor looked the other way when someone took a shortcut to get a shipment out on time.
Right. And in those high-pressure environments, the compliance exists, but the real safety performance remains incredibly fragile. The company is essentially confusing activity with effectiveness.
Okay, I want to push back on this idea of confusing activity with effectiveness for a second.
Sure, but go for it.
Specifically regarding how companies track their progress. Because Barker criticizes the heavy reliance on things like injury rates, recordables, and incident counts, what the industry calls lagging indicators.
Yeah, lagging indicators, the rearview mirror.
Right. But let's be real for a second. Shouldn't a low injury rate be the ultimate, undeniable proof that a place is safe? I mean, if nobody is getting hurt, if the incident count for the quarter is just a flat zero, the system is obviously working.
Right.
Why are we treating a zero injury rate as a flawed metric?
Okay, I hear you. But a zero injury rate is a symptom, not a cause.
Okay, explain that.
The trap that leadership falls into all the time is assuming that the absence of injuries means the presence of safety. And those are not the same thing.
The absence of injuries is not the presence of safety.
Wow. Right. Because lagging indicators are entirely backward-looking. They only tell you what has already happened. They tell you absolutely nothing about what is currently developing in the shadows.
So it literally is like driving a car by only looking in the rearview mirror.
Exactly. You know exactly where you have been. You know you haven't hit anything yet. But you have no idea that there is a brick wall 100 feet in front of you.
Because you're not looking forward.
Right. If an organization relies too heavily on lagging indicators, they are going to miss the weak controls. They're going to miss the inconsistent execution on the floor.
They just don't see it.
They become completely blind to their growing exposure to risk right up until the exact moment a major incident occurs. A zero injury rate doesn't necessarily mean you are safe. It might just mean you've been exceptionally lucky.
And luck always runs out.
It always runs out.
You know, when you are driving via that rearview mirror, you start to see very specific organizational failures.
Yeah.
And one of the most glaring examples of this fake activity is weak corrective action discipline.
Oh, yeah. The endless loop of reporting.
Right. An issue gets identified on the floor. Someone spots a legitimate hazard. They fill out the proper form. It goes into the digital system. Activity. The metric goes up. We did a safety thing.
Yay. We filled out a form.
Exactly.
Right.
But then nothing meaningful actually happens. The issue is repeatedly identified on paper month after month.
Mm.
And, you know, maybe a temporary Band-Aid is applied. But the root of the problem is never truly resolved.
Yeah. And this weak discipline ties directly into another major failure point, which is surface level investigations.
Oh, this part of the article was fascinating.
It's so common, too. When an incident inevitably happens because a hazard was ignored, the organization conducts an investigation purely to close the file and satisfy the compliance requirement.
Let's walk through what that actually looks like in practice for the listener.
Because
yeah. I think this really drives it home.
Okay, yeah. Give me a scenario.
Imagine a scenario where a worker is carrying a heavy load across a factory floor at, I don't know, 2 a.m. They slip on a puddle of hydraulic fluid and they break their arm.
Ouch. Okay.
Right. So a surface level investigation looks at that and identifies the immediate symptom. The worker slipped. So what's the corrective action?
They probably reprimand the worker.
Exactly. Reprimand the worker for not wearing approved slip resistant boots and mandate a new boot policy. The file is closed. The metric is satisfied. Boom. Done.
And everyone pats themselves on the back. But a root cause investigation, on the other hand, asks why the puddle is there in the first place.
Wait, why is there fluid on the floor?
Exactly. Well, the machine is leaking. Okay, why is the machine leaking? The maintenance team hasn't replaced the seals. Why haven't they replaced the seals?
There's always another why.
Always. Because the maintenance budget was slashed by 15% last quarter, forcing the team to run a skeleton crew and defer preventative maintenance.
Wow.
Yeah. So the root cause of that broken arm is a financial decision made in a boardroom 3 months prior, but the surface level investigation punished the symptom on the floor.
That is so wild. But it happens all the time. If you only fix the symptom, the disease remains. And if the metrics are backward looking and the investigations are shallow, the people bearing the absolute brunt of this risk are the frontline workers.
100%. They take all the physical risk.
Which naturally shifts our focus to the human element. We have to look at what this compliance-heavy, performance-weak environment does to the actual human beings executing the tasks.
It creates a massive cultural fallout. That's the only way to describe it. And one of the biggest drivers of that fallout is check-the-box training.
Ugh, check-the-box training.
We've all been there. This is training delivered solely to satisfy a legal or internal requirement. So the company has a record that says a specific employee completed a specific module.
It is exactly like when your computer software updates and you get that massive wall of legal text.
Yes. The terms and conditions.
Right. You just mindlessly scroll to the bottom and click, I have read and agree to the terms and conditions. You complied. But yeah. You learned absolutely nothing about what you just agreed to. You just wanted the pop-up to go away so you could get back to your day.
That is the perfect analogy, and organizations treat safety training exactly like that software pop-up because of the underlying economics.
How so? Like, it's just cheaper.
Way cheaper. Think about it. taking 500 frontline workers off the production line for 4 hours of rigorous practical safety training costs a massive amount of money in lost productivity.
Oh, sure. The line is shut down.
Right. But having those same 500 workers click through a 15-minute generic slide deck during their lunch break, that costs virtually nothing, yet it generates the exact same compliance certificate.
So the paperwork looks identical to the auditors.
Identical. The company is technically compliant, but the actual risk to the worker remains completely unchanged.
When you look at it through that economic lens, you realize why the executives tolerate it. But consider the psychological impact this has on the floor.
It destroys morale.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When frontline employees see that the training is just a legal formality to protect the company, and when they see that their hazard reports result in zero corrective action, they stop trusting the system.
Yeah, why bother speaking up?
Exactly. Why bother speaking up about a frayed electrical wire if you know management is just going to log it in a database and leave it there for 6 months? The trust just evaporates.
And that collapse of trust is accelerated by poor supervisor ownership. Barker really hits on this. No safety program performs well if frontline leaders treat safety as someone else's function.
Like it's just HR's problem.
Right, or the safety guy's problem. If a floor manager thinks risk management is just the job of the EHS department, the system is fundamentally broken. Daily execution of safety lives with operational leadership, not the compliance auditors.
Which brings up the ultimate tension in any business, right?
Aww.
Production versus risk.
Oh, the eternal battle.
Yes, because in these fragile, paperwork-heavy environments, you often have executives who speak so eloquently about safety being the number one priority, you know, during the quarterly town hall meetings.
Oh, they love saying safety first.
Safety is our top priority. But when they are actually managing the floor, they push for production much more aggressively than they manage risk. And the message the workers internalize isn't what the CEO says on a stage. It's what their direct supervisor demands when a major deadline is looming and a machine goes down.
Yeah, if a manager says, we need this shipment out by 5 o'clock, I don't care how you do it, just bypass the safety lock and get it running, that single sentence destroys 100 hours of safety training.
Poof. Gone.
Completely gone. The unwritten rules immediately overwrite the written policies.
So we have clearly diagnosed the illness here.
Right.
You have the paperwork mirage, the backward-looking metrics, the surface-level investigations punishing symptoms instead of systems. We've got the check-the-box training and the complete loss of trust on the floor.
It's a bleak picture, but it's real.
It is real. The organization is stuck on the compliance floor. So if we know the metrics are flawed and the training is broken, the only way to build the ceiling is to shift the mindset entirely. You cannot fix this with more paperwork. The entire operation has to shift to what Barker calls execution-driven thinking.
Yeah, execution-driven thinking. And making that shift is incredibly difficult because it requires friction.
Friction. Okay, unpack that.
Moving from documentation-driven to execution-driven thinking starts with leadership, making it unequivocally clear that safety is an operating expectation. It is not a monthly metric to be reviewed in a boardroom. It is how the business functions day to day.
Let's talk about what that friction actually looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because execution-driven thinking isn't just about a factory worker remembering to wear a hard hat.
No, it's way bigger than that.
It happens in the budget meetings. It looks like a plant manager looking the CEO in the eye and refusing to cut the preventative maintenance budget because it elevates operational risk beyond the accepted threshold.
Exactly. It's pushing back.
Right. It means saying no to production targets if those targets require unsafe shortcuts.
Yep.
And that is a massive cultural shift for an organization used to just, you know, hiding behind audits.
Massive. It forces accountability at every single level.
Yeah.
For investigations, execution-driven thinking means the goal is actual learning and systemic change, not just closing the file and blaming the worker.
Not just focusing on the boots.
Right. Fix the leaky machine.
Yeah.
And for training, it means the information connects directly to the specific risks of the task that person is about to perform. And this is key, verifying they actually have the practical skill to do it safely.
Testing their actual performance, not just making them click agree.
Mm-hmm.
And for those corrective actions that usually stall out, it means the solutions have to be practical, timely, and most importantly, sustainable. Not just a band-aid to satisfy an inspector.
Right.
But the real linchpin of this entire transition comes down to the supervisors. The shift in frontline leadership is what makes or breaks the ceiling.
Yeah. Barker emphasizes that real safety performance requires supervisors who coach rather than act as referees.
Coach versus referee. That's a great distinction.
It really is. Think about it. A referee supervisor just stands back, waits for a violation, throws a yellow flag, and hands out a penalty.
They're just policing the compliance.
Exactly. Just blowing the whistle after the fact.
Whereas a coaching supervisor observes the work as it is actively happening. They correct unsafe behaviors in real time, they explain the why behind the procedure, and they reinforce the expectations right there on the floor.
Yeah, it's a highly active, engaged form of leadership.
And that requires leaders who are present and credible. I mean, if an employee raises a concern about a faulty valve, they need to believe that reporting it will actually lead to the valve being replaced tomorrow, not next year.
Not just put in a database.
Right. That is what real safety performance looks like in the wild. Hazards are identified and neutralized early, long before they ever develop into an incident.
And, you know, the source material leaves us with a really profound observation on this dynamic. Barker says, employees watch closely for the gap between what leadership says and what leadership tolerates.
Oof. What leadership tolerates. That gives me chills.
It's powerful, right? Because consistency is the ultimate glue of any culture. You can have the most robust, thoroughly vetted, written policies in the world. But if a supervisor watches an employee skip a critical safety step to save 5 minutes and says absolutely nothing,
that silence just became the new official policy.
Yes. What you tolerate becomes your culture.
It's the unwritten rules that govern the actual workplace. Now, the goal of moving toward execution-driven thinking is not to abandon compliance. I want to make sure we're super clear on that.
Oh, absolutely not. Compliance remains essential.
Right. You cannot build a safe, functioning organization without that baseline structure and legal accountability. You absolutely need the floor.
You need the floor to stand on. But strong organizations need both.
Exactly. They need the compliance on paper to establish the rules, and they need the execution in reality to protect the people. Because you simply cannot manage a complex, hazardous operation from behind a spreadsheet.
You really can't. And the organizations that perform the best in safety, the ones that maintain operational discipline and actually protect their workforce, they rarely stop at asking, are we compliant?
Because that's the easy question.
Right. It's a binary question based on an audit form. The best organizations ask a much harder, much more useful question. Are we actually getting safer?
Are we actually getting safer? It forces you to look forward instead of backward. Mm-hmm. It forces you to evaluate human behavior and systemic risk rather than just tallying up the documentation.
Yeah, it changes everything.
It really does. I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought experiment today, building on this exact premise.
I love this one.
Yeah, so think about the place you work right now. Imagine if tomorrow morning, your organization suffered a massive, catastrophic computer glitch.
Just a total system wipe.
Total wipe. Every single piece of safety documentation, every policy manual, every signed training record, every perfect audit score, completely wiped out. Gone.
All the paper is gone.
Right. Without all that paperwork to fall back on and point to, would the actual day-to-day behavior of your leaders, your supervisors, and your peers be enough to keep everyone safe?
That is the real test.
It really is. Is your workplace culture one of real coaching, active reporting, and fixing root causes? Mm-hmm. Is it strong enough to survive without the binders? Or was the paperwork the only thing holding the illusion together?